Franklin D. Roosevelt's last major address to Congress followed shortly after his return from meeting with Churchill and Stalin at Yalta. He pleaded for a United Nations that would succeed where the old League had failed. His voice wavers, and the cough of his last illness is audible as he recalls the nation's tragic failure to secure the peace after World War I. As commander and principal representative of the millions of Americans fighting in the war whose end he did not live to see, Franklin D. Roosevelt tells his listeners at that moment, and through recording for all future time, that we cannot fail them again and expect the world again to survive.
Speaker, members of the Congress, I hope that you will pardon me for an unusual posture of sitting down during the presentation of what I want to say, but I know that you will realize that it makes it a lot easier for me in not having to carry about 10 pounds of steel round on the bottom of my legs, and also because of the fact that I have just completed a 14,000-mile trip. First of all, I want to say it's good to be home. It's been a long journey, but I hope you'll also agree that it has been, so far, a fruitful one. Speaking in all frankness, the question of whether it is entirely fruitful or not lies to a great extent in your hands. For unless you are here, you here in the halls of the American Congress, with the support of the American people, concur in the general conclusions reached at a place called Yalta, and give them your active support, the meeting will not have produced lasting results. And that is why I have come before you at the earliest hour I could after my return. I want to make a personal report to you, and at the same time to the people of the country. I come from the Crimea Conference with a firm belief that we have made a good start on the road to a world of peace. Responsibility for political conditions thousands of miles away can no longer be avoided, I think, by this great nation. Certainly, I don't want to live to see another war. As I have said, the world is smaller every year. The United States now exerts a tremendous influence in the cause of peace. We will continue to exert that influence only if we are willing to continue to share in the responsibility for keeping the peace. It would be our own tragic loss if we were to shirk that responsibility. Final decisions in these areas are going to be made jointly, therefore. And therefore, they will often be a result of give and take compromise. The United States will not always have its way 100%, nor will Russia, nor Great Britain. We shall not always have ideal answers, solutions, complicated international problem, even though we're determined continuously to strive toward that ideal. But I am sure that under the agreements reached at Yalta, there will be more stable political Europe and the part of it than ever before. The United Nations must also begin to help these liberated areas adequately to reconstruct their economy. I don't want them starving to death, so that they're ready to resume their places in the world. The Nazi war machine has stripped them of raw materials, machine tools, and trucks and locomotives and things like that. They have left the industry of these places stagnant, and much of the agricultural areas are unproductive. The Nazis have left a complete ruin or a partial ruin in their wake. Start the wheels running again is not a mere matter of relief. It is to the national interest of all of us all of us, to see to it that these liberated areas are again made self-supporting and productive so that they do not need continuous relief from us. I should say that as an argument based on plain common sense. There will soon be presented to the Senate and the American people a great decision that will determine the fate of the United States, and I think, therefore, the fate of the world, for generations to come. There can be no middle ground here. We shall have to take the responsibility for world collaboration, or we shall have to bear the responsibility for another world conflict. For the second time in the lives of most of us, this generation is face to face with the objective of preventing wars. To meet that objective, the nations of the world will either have a plan or they will not. The groundwork of a plan has now been furnished and has been submitted to humanity for discussion and decision. No plan's perfect. Whatever is adopted in San Francisco will doubtless have to be amended time and again over the years, just as our own Constitution has been. No one can say exactly how long peace can endure, only so long as humanity really insists upon it and is willing to work for it and sacrifice for it. 25 years ago, American fighting men looked to the statesmen of the world to furnish the work of peace for which they fought and suffered. We failed them. We failed them then. We cannot fail them again and expect the world to survive again.